Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans for the week of November 12th, 2018. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by my tag team partner, Rick Monsey. Rick, how you doing this morning?
After that main event we had last night, I'm doing great. UFC celebrated its 25th anniversary, and I celebrated watching one of the best main events on free TV I've ever seen.
In 24 years from now, do you think we'll have a 25th anniversary show of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans?
I hope so.
Yeah, but I think we'll be a lot less bloody if we are to do so in 25 years. And if you want to get in on the banter, get in on the talk, we got a couple of emails that came in this week. I would very much encourage you to do so. The email address to talk to us on is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. And you can also hit us up on Twitter, the mothership Twitter account, MMA Torch. That's at MMA Torch, and the show proper Twitter account, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans at MMA Livecast. That is at MMALivecast. Okay, Rick, we got all the plugs and pleasantries out of the way. Let's get right into it because I know you're really excited to talk about it. We're just hours from the UFC's big card in Denver, Colorado, celebrating their 25th anniversary. And before we talk about the main event and everything that happened there and the co-main event, because they're very noteworthy, what did you think of the aesthetics of this event with the UFC breaking out all their UFC 1 graphics? We talked about UFC 1 last week, and this thing had a very UFC 1 feel to it with the way they had the bubble graphics and they had the white fighting dude in the center of the octagon. What did you think of the UFC 1 aesthetics that they put to this thing?
You know, Robert, I was really hoping you were going to ask me that because I feel like our show, at least, we talk about aesthetics a lot and it means a lot to us. Just the visuals that they put out there, you know, there's little signals that we pick up on. And this one was as blatant of an homage as I've ever seen. It kind of reminded me of those old when Raw would have an anniversary show and they would use the old school Raw font and stuff like that. I loved it. I really, really loved it. I think that it's obviously not something they're going to do a lot. Or very often at all. I think the only time I could ever think of the UFC doing something like this is when they changed their octagon to like gold for their 200th show. And when you compare that to this, this fight night, the gold canvas pales in comparison. This was aesthetically one of the most interesting and exciting deliveries I think the UFC has done. And again, I'm not saying they have to do it all the time, but it was really, really nice as an homage. I mean, the tail of the tape was awesome. You know, just how it was all the standard red and blue colors. And when they would show Bruce Buffer coming in, his name would be in that same sort of font style. And then the fighters would be too. And, you know, it's like almost an 80s, early 90s look to it. So it's hard to see the letters. Like I remember at one point I was trying to see how much Yair weighed in as, and I could barely make it out in the white lettering. And it didn't bug me. I just think it'd be interesting to hear people who were watching this fight night at a bar or something and really had no, you know, experience watching UFC fights, what their reaction would have been if they didn't realize this was a homage to a 25-year-ago style.
They would probably think it was going out of business. They're like, man, these guys are having to use this early MS clip art to put their stuff up. Yeah. I'm agree with you. Yeah, you can't do it all the time because then it wouldn't be special and then we wouldn't notice and it might even turn out second rate. But there was something really telling, I thought, whenever they had the logos and, like you said, Buffer. And then they had the current UFC logo, which just looks so sad in comparison. And I don't know if that's just because we're so used to seeing it. It's not necessarily a bad logo, but I felt much less character with the newer logo whenever they would shift to it. What did you think how they opened the main card with the sort of homage to history and giving the brief description of all the fighters at UFC 1? What did you think about how that came across?
That was great. The footage they showed, the narration, it made it seem very serious, which I liked. And then they continued on with that with when they were having like Dariush come out and they were just showing like, hey, he's a jiu-jitsu guy. This is how jiu-jitsu has evolved. And they would show like Beneil Dariush coming out to the octagon and compare it to like Hoist Gracie. And it was just kind of a cool thing. They kept it up, too. They didn't just do it at the beginning and stop. I mean, and so that just made you feel like this was an important event, not necessarily because there's all these title fights and everything. It was more just like it was significant because, you know, you're looking in the mirror at things that have happened in the past. And I like that a lot. And I like the fact that there's little things they did too. Like they played the theme music throughout the show, you know, or the original theme music. And I also really like that the crowd felt like they were a big part of the show as well. I feel like this is one of the most appreciated feeling crowds I've seen on a fight night, period. Like they were into all of it. And I think they realized the significance of the show and they felt like they were kind of part of it. It was like an ECW reunion show, you know, like everybody just felt like they were having a good time, from the fighters to the fans to the production team who was making all this happen.
Yeah. I dare say that Colorado might be a quote smart city, the way we would use that term in pro wrestling, but they definitely knew what's up and they were very much into their local fighters, especially with Pennington and Cerrone, where they were just, you know, the biggest baby faces in the world when they were doing their thing. And then they were kind of curiously quiet in the main event, but I didn't take that as they were uninterested. I felt that more like almost like a Japanese wrestling crowd where they were just into what they were watching and very much invested, even if they weren't super, super vocal. But yeah, I really give them A plus in the aesthetics. Oftentimes I feel like the UFC is almost embarrassed of their history. And I kind of understand why, because they had to sort of shed what they were at that point, which is really a completely different sport, to become this, you know, legitimate big thing that's owned by Endeavor. It's going to be on ESPN, all this stuff. They kind of had to shake that image, but it was cool to see them kind of dust that stuff off for at least one night and pay homage to an event like we talked about last week. It's a really fun event and a really earth changing event. And it was cool to see that be acknowledged on such a big stage on the modern UFC stage. But let's talk about the main event. It was a heck of a main event, ending at the the very infamous 4:59 of the fifth round. Yadier Rodriguez getting a KO via elbow over the Korean Zombie. And this wasn't any old elbow either. I mean, the guy was crouched down and threw an elbow up, you know, behind him and just clocked the Korean Zombie in the exact right place. But even before that, these guys were really taking it to each other in like the friendliest, brutal fight I think we've ever seen, that they were laughing with each other, talking to each other, and they would take a minute to pose, something that was getting the announcers quite agitated throughout the fight. But in the last
exchange, quite agitated too.
Yeah, it's weird. It's jarring. You know, sometimes you might do that at the beginning of the round, but they would do that quite a bit where it's like they were wasting time of the fight. You know, no time to waste with 1 second less. Yeah, you're getting the finish. Rick, your reaction to this fight?
You know, the fight was just, it was just great. It kind of reminded me of a featherweight version of Mark Hunt versus Bigfoot Silva, in the sense where you had these two athletes just pounding at each other, and they're both moving forward for the most part. There's very little groundwork at all. And, you know, all these punches seem to hurt, and all these punches are thrown, or all these kicks are thrown with the intention of knocking the other guy out. And it was incredible. I had a great time watching it. The first round was really back and forth. The second round was going a little bit more Yair's way. And then, you know, Yair was starting to get a little confident by the third round, looking like he had this one in the bag. Then Korean Zombie just started coming back and, you know, winning the third and fourth. And I think the fifth was really pivotal, and it was back and forth. And I saw that Zombie was going to probably pull this one out. But like you said, then that elbow happened and Zombie got hit. And as forward in momentum as that guy is, and as easy as it is for him to take a shot, that shot looked like it just killed him. Like the way he fell looked like a career ending fall. I mean, he just folded like an accordion. He looked like one of those slinkies that like kind of just stops in between two steps, you know, and it was scary at first. And I was really glad that it wasn't a headbutt, because I, like Felder, thought that it was a headbutt that knocked him out initially. But yeah, that sneaky little elbow. And I guess Yair tried that elbow out earlier in the fight and didn't connect as well. So when he hit it this time, it was just spot on. And as they say, it's the shot that you don't see that knocks you out. And yeah, Zombie definitely did not see that coming, but he did see the ground when he woke up, and I felt really bad because I was hoping Zombie was going to win.
That, yeah, it was just brutal, and the way he fell, like you said, and the way that the camera didn't even show him, I was very concerned. The way they explicitly, you know, did not want to have him on TV in the state he was in, where you're thinking, oh my God, like what did happen to this guy? And yeah, and in real time, you really couldn't tell what happened, because they were just kind of exchanged. And then it's like, you know, Zombie got hit by a tranquilizer dart or something, where he just went completely down. But it was the elbow, and it was due to the offense of Yadier Rodriguez. What do you make of Yadier's unconventional offense? He's done this a lot, and it's you know, got him a split decision before, and a guy like Frankie Edgar was completely able to neutralize any of his, I guess you would say, shenanigans, even though they can be very, very effective. What do you make of Yadier's, like, really weird offense?
It's entertaining, but, you know, I think Korean Zombie was just the perfect opponent for him to show it off, because all Korean Zombie does is go forward and take your punches. I mean, that's why the nickname is the Zombie, but I think with people like Frankie Edgar and some of the other top featherweights, he's going to, again, run into a little bit of trouble. But, I mean, it's entertaining to see, and I look forward to seeing what he can do in the future now that he's kind of like seems like he's in UFC for good and he's learned the mistakes he's made. And I don't know. I just don't know if it's a style that will continue to last. I mean, if he starts going against these other flyweights, he can find himself in some pretty deep trouble. I'm sorry, other featherweights, he can find himself in, like, you know, Jeremy Stephens probably will just mow through him in certain respect. And you got Zabit out there, which is the fight I want to see. And so maybe that's the perfect pairing. I know they tried to do that fight before, but Zabit versus Yair, and both of them are flashy. That could be incredible.
Yeah, it seems like the issue is not his fighting style. Can you keep him in the octagon for an extended period of time? That has been an issue thus far. And I'm with you, especially against like a wrestler, like a Frankie Edgar, where the whole concept is wrapping the other guy up.
Right.
It neutralizes all those things that he can do. But I mean, if he were to fight a flyweight, I think that poor flyweight would be like up to Yadier's knees. So that would be something very interesting. I mean, I kind of want to see him Cub Swanson. That kind of sounds kind of fun, doesn't it?
Cub Swanson sounds good. I was trying to think about what the future for both of those guys would be. And I feel like Cub Swanson's going to be more of what they're going to hopefully have the Zombie go against. My dream fight for Korean Zombie would be Jeremy Stephens. Both of them are coming off a loss. And it's not a secret, I'm a big Jeremy Stephens fan at this point. I think he's been having just the most entertaining fights in the world. And him versus the Korean Zombie would be great. But as far as Yair, yeah, Zabit is kind of like the thing I want to see the most, but a Cub Swanson could be cool just because of the style, not necessarily because of the win-loss record. But like you're saying, if he goes against Redsler, like if they pair him up against Chad Mendez, I think it would just be a little bit less of a beatdown, but very similar to Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, any of those old school guys like that, I think would go very much in that direction. How far away are we from a Yadier title fight?
I think that's not something we're going to see. And I don't know, you know, it just depends on what happens with Max Holloway. If Max Holloway stays healthy and actually fights for Brian Ortega, you know, then we got a fight to talk about. But I think there's a lot of things that go into it. The health of the champion, Brian Ortega's trajectory, and whether or not Frankie Edgar finds himself with the title shot, either against Holloway or Ortega in the future. Because as long as Frankie Edgar is looming in the top three, Yair is right outside of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and deservedly so. I know people don't want to see Frankie Edgar in these top positions all the time, but he's earned it. His resume sort of speaks for itself, even though he had the blackout loss to Ortega. Yeah, they got to sort a few things out first, but I wouldn't be surprised if the UFC fast-tracked him, because you just might be short on really, really good contenders pretty soon, especially if Holloway dispatches of Ortega. Then Holloway has taken out Ortega and Aldo, and so it's like, you know, what do you do then? Where do you go from there? He never got the fight with Frankie Edgar, so I guess that is an option. And maybe your boy Jeremy Stephens is the one that that jumps the line ultimately. Fun little division, though.
Yeah,
that featherweight has turned out to be. I just hope we can get the champ. You know, keep our fingers crossed that it actually plays out, because he's got multiple fights that have been canceled recently. I know they both weren't at featherweight, but you just want to see the fight actually happen. And it feels like, you know, the fingers are crossed to see if we can get there. If you were to give a star rating to the main event, how many stars would you give it?
I would give it a full star for each round. So 5 stars, you know, I just loved it. I don't know if it's the best fight of all time. Like, you know, I think people start to get hyperbolic and start going nuts after a really great main event. But I think this one will hold up. It has really good rewatch value, but I think as far as fight nights go, it's one of the best UFC on FS1 fight night main events we've ever had. It's definitely in the top 5.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
What about you?
Yeah, I'd have to really kind of go back and look at all of them, because I don't even know if the main events of the fight nights have always been that good. I think though some of the other ones were a little more high profile than this one, so you kind of rate them slightly higher. They're very good, very good. I don't know, 4.5 stars, I guess 5 stars. It depends what you define as 5 stars as being perfect. It's kind of a stupid thing. I kind of just throw that out there to be a troll. Maybe I'll start overrating fights that happen in Denver, though. What do you think?
Yeah.
I'll gain that reputation.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a elevation factor that goes into it. So that earns an extra 0.5 star just because they were able to go 5 rounds and look like they were at the lowest elevation possible. Like, these guys did not look like they were really affected at all. And
no.
It's incredible.
What do you make of that in general? Obviously, there's been a lot of fight cards in Colorado. There's only been one fight card in Albuquerque. There was the infamous main event with Cain Velasquez in Mexico, where the elevation played a huge, huge role. What's your opinion on having fights in higher elevation cities?
I just think if they're going to do it, you know, these athletes need to be prepared. I was just recently in Telluride, Colorado, working, and they were passing out to the employees like oxygen tanks. Because a lot of these, you know, people from LA and other different parts of the United States weren't used to it. And when you're working and doing stuff and you're just going higher and higher and higher, some people just, I had a coworker who just straight passed out right next to us. And so, I mean, if you're not someone who can handle elevation well and you're fighting, that could be a huge deterrent. I mean, you're talking about that Cain Velasquez versus Verdum card, but I remember not just Cain Velasquez, but that whole fight card, like, it felt like there was at least one fighter in each fight who was like drastically compromised from that elevation. So that's just something that, you know, they're not going to not have an event in an area just because the elevation. It's up to the athlete to be ready for it.
Right. And then you do have a glut of fighters that train in Denver and in Albuquerque. So I think that's a big reason for that, to be honest with you, because if training in an elevation helps you even when you're in a lower elevation area, it makes me think that maybe I could be really good shape if I just go to a lower elevation city. Maybe I'll try that to restart my athletic career. You think that'll work?
Yeah. Just get back. You're in the springtime of your youth. You have plenty of time to get ready for your prime. What do you think of the zombies? I forgot he came out to the Cranberry song because we never see him, you know.
Yeah.
So it's easy for it. That was awesome, though. I thought that was one of the best just moments, you know, just him coming out to that song. It just works perfectly for him, and he timed it out perfectly. So the chorus towards the end was happening as he's circling inside the octagon. That got me super hyped up for the fight.
I wish that any of these companies. I know it's expensive. I wish they would all just pay royalties so we could hear it in its full, you know, with it as part of the sound system on the broadcast. I was thinking that
old, so it's just in the background.
Even when Cowboy Cerrone came out, and I couldn't hear the Kid Rock song quite, and then you kind of heard it, and I was like, that would sound really, really cool if it was, you know, if it was played in the way that you were hearing it in the arena. Like, that would sound really, really cool. It's just, but I know why they don't do it, because it costs a ton of money. You know, that was the big deal whenever with the WWE, when CM Punk got Cult of Personality, you know, in his contract, they paid for the royalties of it, and they just don't do that sort of thing. So obviously it's very, very expensive. You know, Paul Heyman always found ways to skirt around that until he couldn't. Ring of Honor, the same thing. That's why a lot of the ECW on the WWE network is just straight up unwatchable, because it doesn't have, you know, it's got the weird version of Man in the Box for Tommy Dreamer instead of actual Alice in Chains version. But yeah, great pageantry overall on this card. It's something we criticize the UFC for a lot of not really having. And I don't even know if they were responsible for it or if the fighters themselves on this night were just so colorful that you had a lot of that.
Yeah, I think they should keep the octagon the way it was last night. I want the big white symbolic fighter on the UFC world logo to just stay. Like, what else are we going to have? A Modelo logo? Like, just keep that guy in there. I love that.
The UFC, it feels like they need a logo, though, in general, the way other sports do. You know, you got Jerry West with the NBA, with the, you know, dribbling the basketball. They need something like that for the UFC. I don't know what it would be. You know,
it could just be that. I mean, they always go back to it every time they you know, they do a throwback poster every once in a while, like once every year and a half, and it always has that guy in it. We always love seeing it. It's just like, just let us have him for a little bit. But with ESPN come along and stuff, I think that's the last thing they want is that old dated early 90s logo. They're probably going to maybe they'll reshuffle it for ESPN and come up with something.
Yeah,
cool.
I was wondering that as I was watching the event last night and thinking, wow, this is we're in the home stretch of these cards on FS1. And who knows what the UFC is going to look like in 2 months. And will that be a big change? Are we going to see them do something different, especially for their television broadcasts? Let's talk about the co-main event. Very, very interesting fight. You had Donald Cowboy Cerrone getting a late submission in the first round at 446 over Mike Perry. He got it at armbar. Really a fight that you figured these two guys were going to slug it out, ended up being contested on the ground, and Cerrone looked very, very good on the ground. Cerrone had himself a heck of a night. The crowd very, very much into Cerrone, a hometown advantage for him. He had his son and his grandma there at the post fight and just very, very excited about everything that had gone down, but did sort of intimate that he wanted to drop back down to lightweight division. He called out Khabib Nurmagomedov. I don't know if that's going to happen. First off though, Rick, what do we think of this fight?
Great fight. Good result. I'm sorry. I'm going to backtrack. Okay. Fight, not great fight, but it was what it needed to be. I was hoping that like many people that it would be kind of like what the main event was, just two guys standing and punching it out. But Mike Perry didn't show very high fight IQ when he decided to take Cowboy down. I mean, I know he was missing his punches again, stuck in the clinch, but I don't know. I just thought it was a really, really bad idea. And then he finally got out of like the issues he was having on the ground. You know, he was on top in the crucifix position, then he got reversed and then he got out of it. And what he do instead of like backing up and, you know, getting the fight back to the feet, he like tried to do ground and pound, and that just got him in trouble. So I think this fight, I mean, it made Cowboy look like a superstar, but it made Mike Perry not look very smart.
But I think that's a thesis that's been proved over and over again. Mike Perry's right. Not a good fighter. He's a guy that could have good fights and can say some really, really weird stuff, and he's a weird dude, and he's entertaining to a certain point. But, you know, it's kind of funny. I was looking like, well, what is Mike Perry ranked? And yeah, there's no number next to him. He's not that good of a fighter. It is who he is. So this was kind of a gimme in a lot of ways, although it didn't feel like that going into it. But it was definitely a smash spot for the Cowboy. What do you think of his declaration that he wants to challenge for the lightweight title?
Oh, for Cowboy, I think that's kind of unrealistic. I think there's a reason he left lightweight, and it was because he was just getting eaten up by those guys. And he's a decently sized welterweight. I mean, he was huge next to Mike Perry, and at his age, I just don't know how realistic it is for him to keep making that weight cut. And like, it's still a murderer's row in lightweight. I don't know if it's any better, you know, for him in welterweight. It's just, I don't know. But and again, in welterweight, there's a lot of guys that he could be going against that he's already lost to. I mean, Rafael dos Anjos, he's got Robbie Lawler in front of him. Damian Maia will get him in some trouble. Neil Magny. I see why he wants to do it, because there's probably more money in lightweight fights. Like, you know, what is he going to do? Just keep winning and fight Tyron Woodley? I mean, Khabib is the hottest champion they have right now, so I understand it completely. I just don't know how green the pastures are on the lighter weight class.
Yeah, lightweight is a loaded division right now. When you think about it, the division where Nate Diaz is ranked ninth, you know, it's a pretty habited division at the moment. But this is the cycle with Cerrone that he's bounced back and forth, and whenever, you know, something doesn't work out for him at one weight class, he goes to the next. It was weird though. I wasn't expecting that to come out of his mouth. There are fights at lightweight though that if they could happen with Cerrone are very, very tasty in a lot of ways. I just don't think he would be the victor in any one of them. That's my fear with him going to lightweight.
You know, a fight would be really good that they have to make is right away. His lightweight return would be against Justin Gaethje and make that the main event of some ESPN Plus card. People would, I mean, that would be kind of an MMA dream fight for a lot of people, just kind of like how the Perry thing was to a certain extent, except I actually think this one would be competitive.
Yeah, you would give Gaethje the advantage, I think would be the difference there. But yeah, that would be amazing. I just I don't know. It feels like a concussion on a pole match.
What'd you think about the way that Perry broke his arm? Like, that's pretty crazy too, right? Like that, like, I thought that submission wasn't going to work. I thought Perry put himself in a spot where he was safe, but do you think it was the lifting up that he did with Cerrone while he was in the arm, or the impact down, or what do you think did it?
I think it was the total leverage that Cerrone had, and I think it was the size disparity that just, you know, strained the limb to that extent. It was a quick tap, and I didn't. That's another one that I didn't see the tap immediately, and I thought, what the heck is happening? But like the announcers said, Mike Perry wasn't contesting it either. He got himself into some trouble. Yeah. I don't think any of us thought that this was going to be a fight that was going to end on the ground the way it did, and end in relatively short fashion. I think if you thought this was going to be short fashion, you were thinking of a Donald Cerrone head kick. Is there anything you saw in Cerrone though? This is his first fight post Jackson Wink at the feud he's got with them. Does he look any different to you in any way?
Fighting style wise, I mean, not really. I think that he was able to evade Mike Perry's 1-2 combinations and get in the clinch and throw some knees and easily control on the ground. It's hard to say because, like you said, Mike Perry's not exactly the opponent that you're going to have an exhibition fight with. It's more kind of just like a squash match. And so, I didn't see really any big differences. I think the only difference is that would have been more noticeable is like post fight when he was talking about having a kid and stuff like that. And he actually had hair, which is a good look for him. He looked like a kind of like a different person. Usually when he has clean shaven and shaved head, he kind of comes off as a scary dude. This was a little bit more dad Cerrone.
Yeah. This looked more like a cowboy Cerrone, like an actual cowboy that you would see, you know, at the feed store, getting something done with the scruffy beard. He looked huge, but I don't know if that was just a contrast to Mike Perry. But he looked like a foot taller than normal, and he looked very bulked up. Facial hair might have something to do with that, though.
He also added a dog to his back tattoo. Did you see that?
No. I saw it, obviously.
But yeah, I must have hallucinated it if it didn't happen. But there's actually, with the cowboy tribal tattoo on his back, there is a tattoo of a dog poking out on that logo. So if you guys missed it, there's an Easter egg for you.
Yeah, there's your homework, folks. Find the dog on Cowboy Cerrone's back. Well, I mean, it's not the worst tattoo in MMA history, right?
No, we got a couple of really bad ones.
Yeah, and there's no angel wings on his back.
Mm-mm. No Johnny Cash tattoo on his arm, nothing like that.
Oh, cowboy. I can't believe he's only 35.
Yeah. No, it's crazy to think he's 35, but he's like a Nogueira.
Yeah, he's the oldest possible 35 you could be. It's like, God, he's only like in 2016 when he was on that bit of a run he was on before he hit the Masvidal run, like he was only 33, really? It just, he fights so often. I would think he'd be like about 140 at this point. And he is at MMA years.
Yeah, he's the kind of 35-year-old that 32-year-old fighters meet and call him a legend. You know, he's like 3 years older than some of these guys, but they look at him like he's been in the sport 20 years.
We talked about that with the Yancy Medeiros fight. We're like, wait a sec. Like, Yancy Medeiros wasn't fighting Hoyce Gracie or Ken Shamrock. Like, he was fighting a guy that was 4 years older than him. It made no sense, but it's just, you would though have literally grown up fighting him if you're watching him if you were in your early 20s though, at this point as a newer fighter, because, you know, he's been on TV for so long, and even with the other companies before the UFC, he was very noteworthy outside of the UFC before he came in, and then he's fought so often. He's just kind of part of the furniture. He's always there.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on to the third fight from the top. Your favorite, Jermaine Durandamy, getting a unanimous decision victory over Raquel Pennington. Pennington looked good in spurts, but I thought the size disparity here really played a major factor. Not really the most exciting of fights, but I did think Durandamy looked considerably better than Pennington here. What do you make of this fight? What do you make of Pennington's kind of response to her loss to Amanda Nunes?
Yeah, I don't think that Pennington looked as good as maybe you did. I think that she looked somewhat she just didn't look like she had an answer for Jermaine. And, yeah, I don't think we found a contender out of this fight at all. Like, I thought that this was a kind of like a lull in the fight card for me personally. And, maybe it's cause I'm not just the biggest fan of Jermaine and everything, but you got Jermaine's number five, Raquel's number four. And I don't see either of them finding Amanda Nunes anytime soon. So it was just kind of a placeholder fight with no real, you know, no real impactful result. It just looked like Raquel, you know, she was on a little streak for a while and now she's off it. And yeah, I don't want to say too many mean things about Pennington, but I was just really disappointed with this fight.
No, it's interesting because Nunes is going off to fight Cyborg. And you would think in theory, well, we've seen super fights in the past, then the division kind of gets really good because there is no champion and you have these sort of really tasty matchups. I've said that twice. I must be hungry. Tasty matchups. But you have matchups that are there when the champion returns that everyone wants to see. And that's why people get a little annoyed with the super fights. And that's part of their fun. That's not happening in women's bantamweight. Like, nobody has really distinguished themselves as the fighter who you can kind of say, look, Amanda Nunes is ducking. She's going out fighting Cyborg, which fighting Cyborg is not a duck by any stretch of the imagination. But just no distinction in that division. That division feels like it's been stuck in like this class system of everybody just kind of is where they are. Nobody's going to rise up and nobody's going to fall too much. It's kind of disappointing for a division that even post Ronda Rousey was still a pretty fun division, but just has kind of really, really stagnated in the last year or so.
Yeah, if I was a UFC and I wanted to do some strategic booking, I would have Kaitlyn Vieira go against Jermaine next and just have those two kind of eliminate each other to a certain respect. Whoever wins, wins. And then have Aspen Ladd sneak around those two and give her another fight that she could shine in, maybe like against a Kat Zagano or like Juliana Pena or something like that, and then give Aspen Ladd the title fight. Because I think Aspen Ladd has some potential in this women's bantamweight division to shine. But I think that if she goes against someone like Jermaine Durandamy, she's almost four. And, you know, I think Aspen Ladd is, I'm looking at five foot six, and Jermaine is almost 6 foot tall. So, I mean, if you want to talk about size discrepancy, it feels like they should be in two completely different divisions. So I would just be careful with the UFC and just, trying to get some new faces in there, because even if Jermaine runs through the top five, nobody wants to see her fight Amanda Nunes. I'm sorry. It just, we have a history with her and the fans.
I like how it's scarred you to the point that, that it's had this impact. And it's funny, like, you know, Shevchenko dropping out of the division was I think a bigger loss now in retrospect when you look back at it. And then Juliana Pena was kind of the next chosen one. But she had the loss to Shevchenko, and I believe she had a baby. So she's been out for quite a while. Let's see if she comes back. She kind of seemed like she would be the one that was gonna be the next in line in the division. And since then, like I've said, the division has just stagnated to such a point. Like Holly Holm is the number one contender, and that kind of makes sense, but it still feels a little weird because she's only won one fight in the division in like 4 years. I guess in a sense the featherweight win counts somewhat to your ranking in bantamweight. I would say to a point that seems to be true, but that division just needs to needs a new star. And like you said, Aspen Ladd might be that person. She looked very good in the Tiny Evinger fight. We commented like she might be the future. They need fresh blood. That's, and all those women, I think with the exception of Pena that we were talking about, they're all like in their mid to late 30s as well. So it's like, yeah, something different definitely is needed. What'd you think of Dariush taking out Thiago Moises with a unanimous decision? 30-25 cards on this one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a statement right there. 30-25 is, you know, that's impressive. I think it was just it's what he needed, but you know, he got knocked out pretty bad earlier in the year by Alexander Hernandez. Dariush did, so it's just he got a win. He got it back in the win column. I wouldn't say it was the most exciting fight in the entire world, but it is what it is, and it was kind of cool to see him show off his ground game and just kind of, again, a throwback to the early UFC days. So it fit for where it was and what it needed to be, but it's not a fight I'll rewatch.
Yeah, definitely a backpack type of fight where he was just stuck on him
right
the entire time. He did have a kind of an interesting exchange with some unknown strawweights, with Macy Barber taking out Hannah Cypher's TKO 201 of the second round. Do you enjoy this little fight?
I did, man. Cypher's looked so small against Barber.
It was jarring. That was a theme, yeah, of the night in a lot of ways, where one fighter, now I'm going through these, Yadier has those long legs compared to the Korean Zombie. Cerrone looked much bigger than Mike Perry. Durandamay is much bigger than Parrington. Size disparity, maybe that was in the spirit of UFC 1 when you didn't have weight classes. Size disparity,
right,
was definitely on display today. Go ahead with the rest of your point, though.
I think that Barber is someone that they're definitely going to want to put a jetpack on and shoot up there, because she was on the Contender Series, and I mean, she was in the main event of her fight. Like, they obviously had some plans for her, and with a performance like that, I can see why. So it was good. It was finished at the right time too. It probably could have gone a little longer, but there was nothing that Cyphers could have done in that position. And yeah, it was just a kind of an exciting fight, and it was, you know, just what we needed at that time.
Now, a fight I found much less exciting was the opener. You had Mike Trizano taking out Luis Pena, split decision, violent Bob Ross, as we call him in certain circles. What'd you think of this opener?
Well, I'll just steal your joke you said off air. He wasn't violent enough, Bob Ross, because he lost.
He needs to be violent-er, Bob Ross. Just getting a little angry, yeah, with those paintings.
Yeah, that's about it, though. It was a fight.
Yeah, that's pretty much all there is to say about it. Is there like a violent Bill Nye the Science Guy?
That would be great.
Or in the women's division, you have like brutal Carmen Sandiego.
Just, yeah. Or who's the, I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. I was trying to one up you, but I failed.
Like vicious Ben Stein. I mean, I'm trying to think of other like 90s appeals to children. But yeah, I'm sure we could come up with a list somewhere. Anything on the prelim card that you would recommend to the public?
I mean, it was an okay prelim card. There was a couple submissions, KO here and there, but I would say for the most part, it was a card that was there for the main card, but specifically there for the main event and the co-main. And that's what they advertised, and that's what we got. Two interesting and entertaining fights, and the main event being one of the best fights of the year.
Yeah, I'm glad that it didn't completely disappoint, because this is one of those cards I felt like if you were talking to moderate UFC fans and they would ask you ahead of time, should I watch this, the UFC faithful would have been like, yeah, this is definitely one to watch. And sometimes you get bit whenever you make those recommendations. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that didn't happen here. I said last week this needed to be a big Fox card, just with the level of fights they had and for pacing purposes, but was not the case with the college football action going on the way it was. But overall, I think a good night for the UFC, a win for the UFC, some interesting stuff that came out of it. So I think it's all good from this card. I did want to address something though. We got an email. We got two emails actually from the same person, our good friend Patrick from Germany. He sent us an email regarding this. Let me pull that up and we'll talk about that. As I hate the new Gmail. As a side note, it is terrible. It is laggy. That stupid M does not come in.
You know, it's funny. You were talking about entertaining fight nights. I just previewed the last four as you were talking. And yeah, this was the good one, guys.
Yeah. And I put on Twitter last night, like, until the UFC 231, there's nothing happening in these next couple. There's good fights on each one of them, but there's not like a solid card as a whole. Okay, Gmail finally cooperated. Let me read Patrick's email here. Hi, guys. It's Patrick from Germany. Just wanted to ask you why the Korean Zombie fight is the main event and not the Cerrone versus Perry. Thanks a lot. You're the best MMA podcast that I know. P.S. The pronouncing of my name is good. I don't expect you to say it like a German. And then he gets a smile emoji. So translation, we're not saying it right, but he's going to accept the way that we're saying it. We didn't really talk about this last week, but I think that's a good point. What did you make of the fight order of Zombie and Yair being the main event over Perry and Cerrone?
I think it makes sense because Zombie and Yair were both ranked in their division and Cerrone and Perry weren't. And I think the UFC kind of figured that this Cerrone and Perry fight would be kind of like, I wouldn't say a freak show fight, but it's definitely kind of like a featured attraction feel to it. Whereas the, you know, originally you got to remember too that it was supposed to be Frankie Edgar versus the Korean Zombie. And Frankie Edgar is a main event guy. He's the guy who has entertaining 5-round fights, and Korean Zombie is a big time fan favorite. So that made sense for a main event. But yeah, Frankie Edgar got pulled out and you had Yair. So there's really no reason to make that now a co-main just because Frankie wasn't in it. You still got Korean Zombie, a big fan favorite, and Yair is someone they want to put up there as a potential star. So, you know, Cerrone's not, he's not the future at all. He's just someone who's going to kind of always be there. And Perry, by all rights and purposes, like we said, isn't always the most entertaining fighter.
Yeah, and I had almost the same exact take in that, like, there was more future at stake in the current main event. And even in the original main event, that's there's title implications there. There's,
right.
It's much more important. I think aesthetically, it would have been cool for it to end the way that it did. And we actually got a follow-up email from Patrick this morning right before we recorded it. So thanks for sending that in, Patrick, for getting it in. And remember, send us emails. Get us your questions, even current events questions the way Patrick is, or even deep dive long-form questions that we could spend some time really, really researching. MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALiveCast. But Patrick said, good morning. It's Patrick again. Okay. Now I know why the fight was the main event. That was awesome. I thought Cerrone with his baby in the octagon would be a good end of the night, but this insane elbow was a real explanation point. Thanks and good night. Well, thanks again, Patrick, for sending the email. Yeah, it kind of worked out either way. I think you had the best of both worlds. You had the epic fight to close it off, and you had the Cerrone moment. So I think it all worked out, like we were saying, for the UFC.
Yeah, I think aesthetically both could have been appealing, but just the chaos of not knowing exactly what happened in the finish, and then Yair collapsing to the ground and just everybody jumping over the cage and this huge like fan disbelief was the perfect way to end this fight night.
Yeah. And so I think we're both giving our stamp of approval onto this card. Rewatchability, just watch the top two fights. That's all you need to watch.
Yeah.
But you know, the rest of the card's not bad, but it's pretty irrelevant. So that's where I would recommend going there. Okay. You know, Rick, we're going to have to just have an international section of the show because there is more news that gets made overseas, specifically in Asian markets, every week on this show. This week, you have one for the like fifth week in a row getting some run with us. They announced that both Eddie Alvarez and Demetrius Johnson will be involved in Grand Prix, and that's kind of how they're going to roll out their two new UFC acquisitions. What do you make of that? Is that a good way to use the new toys that they got?
I would think that you'd want to pit them against some established star or some young uprising star and just kind of feature them as part of a featured fight as opposed to a part of a tournament. But that's just me. I don't know how those promotions work, and maybe Grand Prix are more kind of what brings fans to the, you know, like kind of a pride feels, or that's more of their regular thing. So it's hard for me to judge that, but it just surprises me.
Yeah, I got that vibe off it as well, that it is just kind of the way they do business. And there's a history in MMA and combat sports of tournaments. I wasn't expecting that to be the case. I think it's very interesting, though, to see how that plays out then, because very quickly, both of these guys are going to fight a lot of different fighters. And we'll really see, you know, are they going to be so far ahead of the pack, or are they going to get clipped by some guy that none of us have ever heard on? Either way, I think it's fairly interesting. But like we said too, it's a different game with one in the Chinese promotion. It's a completely different ballgame than American MMA or even Japanese MMA. But they also acquired Misha Tate this week. Now, for a few minutes on Twitter, that gained a lot of buzz because it kind of seemed like, oh wow, Misha Tate is going to come out of retirement to fight for one. But that's not the case. Misha Tate, though, was announced as the vice president of One. What do you make of that coming kind of out of nowhere?
Yeah, it's coming out of nowhere is definitely what I thought. But, you know, maybe she's been in talks with him and showed them that she could be the vice president of an organization. I thought she was just going to be like an announcer. You know, I don't want to. I like Misha Tate a lot. And, you know, whatever makes her happy and whatever works for her is great. It was very surprising.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
I think it's a pretty savvy move on their part to have a recognizable American face as you try to kind of expand the company. And clearly, like, One is opening their checkbook and they're looking to make some moves. And something that, like, New Japan Wrestling kind of irks me on, and I know the American market isn't their number one priority, and nor should it be, but it's very inaccessible to an English-speaking audience. And so I think with somebody like Misha Tate as the face of an organization like this, whenever they're going to do press, whenever they're going to do promotion, she's like the perfect person to put on there. And I think she's been pretty good when they've had her at the desk on UFC shows. How well do you think she does in that capacity?
Yeah, when she's at the desk or when she's doing commentary. I think she did some for Invicta. I think she's, you know, I think she'll be a good ambassador. And, you know, what is not to like about Misha Tate? I mean, she's the only person I can think of that got the ball rolling on the hate of a Ronda Rousey. You know, Ronda Rousey was this. Misha kind of contributed to Ronda being this polarizing star in many ways.
And she seems, unlike Ronda, she seems like the most likable person in the world.
Right.
The way she carries herself. And I think sometimes maybe it gets a little overblown the way she's like saved someone from drowning at one point and all that stuff that went on. But those things did happen and she's extremely likable and well spoken and kind of is the legacy, living legacy of women's MMA in the UFC in a certain way in that she's there from the Ronda era, but she was there a little bit after. And didn't have some of the baggage attached to her that Ronda Rousey did. So she's a very interesting fighter. Got to be a champion. Retired, you know, seemingly with all her faculties intact. Just had a baby last year. So it seems all good for the Misha Tate camp. And I think this is a great move by One. I don't know where she will serve business wise because I don't know about their business dealings and what the VP actually has to do. But like I said, even in an ambassador role, I think she will be great. Something happened this week though, and it's kind of related to what was going on in One, as you know, they shipped Demetrius Johnson off to One in the infamous Ben Askren trade. And when that happened, there was a lot of scuttlebutt that the UFC would be shutting down the flyweight division. There were reports, I think originally reported by Flow Combat this week, that was in fact going to happen, and some fighters have already been cut. With that said, you do have a fight that seemingly is booked between Henry Cejudo, the current flyweight champion, the guy who beat Demetrius Johnson and ended that very long title reign, taking on TJ Dillashaw. And that is not a surprise, but is a surprise that apparently that fight is going to be contested at flyweight. Let's break this down piece by piece. What do you make of them shutting down the flyweight division seemingly as a whole?
It's about time. Sorry. I mean, that's a bummer. No, I'm really happy about it. I'm ready for this division to be over. And there's nothing against the fighters themselves. It's just something that was an experiment and it went on for a while. But without your dominant Mighty Mouse champion, it really exposed. And Cejudo is not a bad champion to have. But without Mighty Mouse, you know, just being the overlord of that division, it really exposed how there's not these up and coming contenders fans are necessarily excited to see. And honestly, when you see a fight on a fight card and it says flyweight next to it, I don't really get excited about it. So I'm kind of looking forward to these guys moving up. And I don't want anyone to lose their job, but it is nice that One championship is there to kind of help supplement some income. But I just think we should just get rid of this division. And I apologize if I'm being a little harsh in that respect.
Yeah, tell us how you really feel next time, Rick.
Yeah. I've been a proponent of this for a long time.
I think there's been a bit of outcry for the UFC doing this, but I think it's outcry on a personal level. Like, you feel bad for guys who probably weren't getting paid that good to begin with, who could be losing their job. And even if, okay, one is an option, yeah, but you still got to move to China. Like, that's not the easiest thing in the world. Like, it's not like, you know, you work on the other side of town now. So there is some adjustment there. I think, though, there's this passion about wanting to see it continue, but that passion, I don't think, ever really translated to eyeballs, to ratings, to pay-per-views. And there's a lot of blame to go around for that. But, you know, from a business perspective, it kind of makes sense. The UFC is already bloated enough as it is. I think less fights in general is better. But like you said, you don't like to see people lose their job. Where do you think, ultimately, you talked about it being an experiment, and it's only been there here since like 2012. Or was it 12 or 14 when the flyweights, when Demetrius got the title? I think it was 14. 13, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I should have done my research a little better before. Regardless, we're around 5 years or so of the flyweight division being a thing. Where do you think it all went wrong for this division?
I think it went wrong when the very first world heavyweight title fight, honestly. I mean, it could have gone wrong in other parts, but back in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I'm trying to find the date now too. 2012, September 22nd, 2012. You had Joseph Benavidez versus Demetrius Johnson for the flyweight title, and the crowd booed that fight. Like, I remember that on the top of that card was John Jones versus Vitor, and it was an exciting fight, and Vitor almost caught John Jones a submission, and it was just kind of an interesting comparison because then you had this light heavyweight fight at the top, but on the co-main with Mighty Mouse versus Joseph Benavidez, in the post-fight interviews, Dana White was sitting there defending the fight. He was like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. If you didn't like that fight, you need to not buy a UFC ticket anymore. I think that was when he started saying that. And I think that's a little bit of a telling remark. You know, people just weren't interested, and it took a long time for Mighty Mouse. In a lot of ways, represented the division in the sense where, like, if Mighty Mouse fights were not being featured on pay-per-views and being thrown on the main events of Fox cards and even FS1 cards, it was a reflection of the interest level of the division itself. And so it took a long time for Mighty Mouse to kind of get recognized. I honestly feel like it was up until he did that submission, that flying armbar of Ray Borg, where people were like, okay, Mighty Mouse is legit. And then he lost not too long after that. And so it's like almost like with Mighty Mouse losing, you're in some ways losing the potential of the division. And now that not only did he lose, but he's just leaving the company. I mean, that right there is just kind of like, I think, the death blow. And I think that they really didn't get any other stars. I mean, Joseph Benavidez and Cejudo, and those were kind of the two guys that were floating around the top. And he beat them a couple times, and then he finally lost against one of them. I just didn't think that this division had very big legs to begin with. Like, can you name any of your favorite flyweights right now? Like, you can welterweights or lightweights or heavyweights?
I mean, they're all, I think Cejudo was very good even before this fight. Like, he had kind of changed his whole thing up. They're all guys that UFC hardcores appreciate what they do, but they're not stars. And that has been the case. And it wasn't just the case for this division. Look at what featherweight was for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a little guy by the name of Conor McGregor came around, and it completely changed the course of that division. It comes down to stars, and the division never got a star that it really gravitated towards. And part of that might be, you can kind of blame on Demetrius Johnson in that he was just so heads and shoulders above everyone else in the division that nobody really, really emerged out of it. With that said, I mean, it's not like, you know, Conor McGregor is undisputably the best fighter in either of the divisions that he's held the title in, but he made himself a star, and he turned into a star, and they never got that star. We talk about these women's divisions, you know, now with Ronda Rousey gone, bantamweight kind of isn't that interesting, kind of isn't that fun. in light heavyweight, if you didn't have Cormier and John Jones, that's the glamour division historically of mixed martial arts, and that's got nothing going on. So it comes down to stars, and they never got that star. And I think they got pigeonholed very early. You talked about the Benavidez fight. They got pigeonholed very early as like these uninteresting little guys. I hate to use the term vanilla midgets, but that's kind of the way that people think about how someone like Vince McMahon would think of smaller cruiserweight wrestlers is kind of how it actually played out within the UFC's flyweight division. The difference there is I think if they were proving to be a ratings draw and a pay-per-view draw, regardless of the preconceived notions of the promoter, they would have got that push. I think they never did. And I just think it was always incompatible with how guys like Demetrius Johnson and how the UFC promotional machine worked. They never quite got symbiotic, and that harmed the division for several years, and now it's going to be gone. With that said, what do you make of them still booking a title fight for the division?
I think that, you know, it doesn't really make that much sense to me, besides the fact that if TJ thinks he can win and hold two titles and then just basically never have to release the one title because they're folding the division, I think that it's all about him just losing an extra 10 pounds, and that way he can get another 5 pounds of gold on his shoulder. You know, I think that's it. Like, I don't think he plans, if he wins, to actually defend the flyweight title. I think it's to get the title and then the buried division. So, you know, if it's the swan song for the division, that's fine. I you know, it's kind of nice in some ways that flyweight will end with a fight happening and not just with Cejudo winning the title and then it just being retired.
Right. And even if Cejudo holds on to the title, there's no reason why the title has to be decommissioned. Like, it's mm-hmm. just a title. Like, it's becoming increasingly clear. Titles just are what they are. They're promotional tools. They're props. They really are. Even in the legitimate world of mixed martial arts, they're there so you could put that on the poster. And so there's no reason for that it has to really go away if a flyweight contender, maybe from another organization, maybe from one, kind of emerges. There's no reason why the UFC can't bring them in. We talk about it all the time. There is no women's featherweight division. The UFC has a women's featherweight champion, and they lined up fights for her. There's no reason why that couldn't, in theory, happen for the flyweights. I think it's much less likely because that's a really extra special case. Maybe if you still had Mighty Mouse around, you just had him as the flyweight title and didn't have a division.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Cejudo is going to could quite have that. But yeah, there's no reason that the title has to completely go away. But it is interesting to see what TJ Dillashaw will look like 10 pounds lighter.
Yeah, that is kind of scary because he already looks like he's a little emaciated when he's making 135. It would be funny though if TJ loses the bantamweight title but just carries around the flyweight title forever, you know, just like, I'm still the champ, never lost this thing, you know. I think that would be a great gimmick, kind of like a Ric Flair real world champion.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I do find it interesting though, if you fold up the flyweight division and you don't get rid of all these guys like John Moraga, Ray Borg, you know, Tim Elliott, Sergio Pettis, this is going to be bantamweight's gain. You know, all these guys are just going to have to gain 10 more pounds, fighting pounds. And then they're going to be shoveled over to bantamweight. And then meanwhile, bantamweight then is going to start to get super crowded. And so bantamweight might lose some guys to featherweight, then featherweight. You know, this like breaking this division apart is going to shuffle a lot of little things into the other divisions as well. It's going to kind of all cross over, I think.
Yeah, it just depends how many guys they keep. That'll be the key. But like, yeah, you wouldn't figure them to get rid of Sergio Pettis.
Right,
like he's a guy they would keep, or like a Brandon Moreno maybe, and you know, you could see what's going on there. I would suggest maybe a guy like John Dodson should probably see what's going on in China. I think he would be better mm-hmm. suited over there. But yeah, it's uncertain times for sure, but very interesting to watch, you know, these smaller weight classes. I wouldn't mind another American promotion popping up that featured these guys. I think that's been the best they ever were in America. Was when you had a WEC to feature lighter weight fighters. So they were kind of the top of the card, and you had a Uriah Faber and even a Jose Aldo emerge sort of out of that scene. I wouldn't mind if something like that were to happen again.
Yeah, it might not be a bad idea. I just don't think they really have a home anymore with the UFC.
No, and it's what a weird end it is. Speaking of weird things, last Sunday night, I thought we were going to be opening the show talking about Ryzen. Because that was the big scuttlebutt last Sunday night, when all of a sudden images from Twitter started popping up of one Floyd Mayweather appearing at a Ryzen press conference. Now he was going to face Tenshin. You got the last name for me, Rick?
Natsusukuwa. God, I practiced it and I didn't nail it.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
Even Floyd only said Tenshin throughout the entire press conference. So we'll go with Tenshin from now. And we don't want to make him angry because he could totally kick our heads off. But that was the big announcement. You're going to have a end of the year fight. We were unsure what the pay was going to be because Floyd didn't say anything about that. Nobody knew what the rules were going to be. Was it boxing? Was it MMA? Was it some kind of weird mixed rules fight with rounds? And ultimately, it's not going to happen. Floyd Mayweather coming out a few days later on Instagram explaining that he was told that he was signing up for an exhibition in front of some elites in Japan, a very small kind of private gathering, and to do a showcase with Tenshin. And then when he got to the press conference, it was presented as this actual public fight. And he said he played along while they were in the press conference in order to not create an incident. But once he got back home, he wanted to clarify, and therefore the fight was off. What the heck do we make of all of this, Rick?
Well, Ryzen definitely got a bump in eyeballs and exposure through this whole situation, and they kind of come off I don't think they come off that bad, honestly, because I don't believe very much of what Floyd just said in that press release or whatever it was. And I really feel like someone coached Floyd to what to say in that explanation, or someone else just legitimately wrote it for him, because I don't Floyd doesn't come off as someone who makes all that much sense. And so which makes sense, because this is super confusing. And I think that what ended up probably happening was Floyd had no idea who he would have been fighting to begin with. If there was any real intention on this happening, like he just goes there and he sees this Tenshin guy and they start talking, and then Shawn goes up to Floyd and goes, you know, this guy can actually really fight, right? And then shows like a Tenshin like compilation video on YouTube, and Floyd's like, oh, I don't want any of that. That could be possibility number one. And possibility number two, which is what a lot of people are thinking, is this has all been a big publicity stunt, and that Floyd had zero intention of doing anything. He was just paid an X amount of money to show up to this press conference, announce that he would be doing some fight, and basically just pull out. And now Ryzen is been on TMZ and it's a worldwide topic. Intention looks like a superstar that Floyd may be afraid of.
Yeah, that's exactly my takeaway from this, that this was a personal appearance. That's what it was. Let's get some buzz. Let's get Floyd at our press conference. Let's get all the clicks. Let's get all the attention. Let's get everybody watching highlights of Tenshin on YouTube, and let's promote the heck out of this thing. And then Floyd collects a check and it's all good for everyone. Some people were really outraged, like, on Sunday night, like, oh, people are really falling for this. This is going to happen. Well, I mean, they announced it, so you kind of had to wait till they unannounced it to say. But even as people were saying, this, what a great swindle this is, and this is such a scam. Who got scammed? Like, it didn't cost you any money to watch that Ryzen press conference on YouTube. You're not paying for it on pay-per-view. Like, who got scammed in this situation? Your brain, maybe? Like, that's about it.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, this is just Floyd being Floyd.
Yeah,
you know, he's doing this in boxing. So I just don't think people are used to, like, MMA fans and fans who be following Ryzen and stuff like that. They're not used to Floyd being like this. But this is kind of like a boxing thing in certain respects, like teasing a fight. That's why boxing is so frustrating to people, because they don't actually have fights you want to see a lot of the time, but they tease them all the time. Like, they'll have face-offs and stuff, but it just never happens. I was really skeptical that this was going to happen as soon as I saw it. And you know, and it's funny, because I don't even think this is him trying to like throw some shade down at Dana White, saying, look, I can get in a kickboxing fight. I don't think we'll see Floyd in that atmosphere at all. He's too smart. Like,
is the door completely closed on that, even in like a friendly exhibition type of setting? And you think it's just never going to happen?
I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think that we're more likely to see Floyd somehow participate in getting one of his fighters in the UFC, you know, like one of, because he owns Mayweather production and stuff like that. Like, I see that happening as a, I think see that more as a realistic opportunity than it is for Floyd himself to step in the octagon.
As like an agent kind of role.
Yeah. Within the UFC. Promoter, you know, and then just takes one of his guys because, I just, yeah, I don't see how that happens.
They're going to be in business at some point. They've talked to each other so much over the past year, and Dana White keeps talking about his Zuffa boxing and whether or not that actually happens. There is a future together. It's just, it's probably not with like Floyd and Treat the Octagon.
Right. No, I agree.
But yeah, like I said, I mean, yeah, maybe it's a swindle, but you didn't lose any money. So
it's a fun little thing. And it was cool to see Floyd's tracksuit, whatever that was.
And like you said, Ryzen got a ton of attention. Tension got a ton of attention. Hey, easy for me to say.
Speaking of tension.
Well, there was a lot of tension in the room when Tension came in, but he got a lot of attention for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's early, folks. Saying this stuff. Speaking of awkwardness, let's talk about CM Punk. Going to be commentating for Cage Fury. Cage Fury, a promotion featured on UFC Fight Pass. I've said for years I thought this was the end game with CM Punk. I thought he was going to be like the voice of the UFC, getting a fight or two in to kind of have his credibility somewhat enhanced. I don't think him fighting actually helped that. I think it made it much, much worse.
Much worse.
To be honest with you. But I think that was kind of the end game here for him to be a voice of the UFC or a commentator or a part of the broadcast. And this would seem to be the first step. How good do you think CM Punk's going to do here?
You know, I've heard him do some commentary back for his in the WWE with independent wrestling promotions and stuff. And it's kind of a, he had a jovial sort of like lightheartedness to his commentary, kind of a smart aleck. He can't do that at MMA. They'll eat him alive. I think it's a good idea for him to start kind of in a smaller promotion, something that only people at UFC Fight Pass are going to see. And for him to just, you know, do the opposite of what he did in his fighting career, where he just went right to the big show and got destroyed. Just let him start out small. And if he ends up being good, we'll see him over at ESPN.
Yeah. And so I think the ceiling could be really high for a commentator within the UFC. And he's not just interested in MMA. He's a big hockey fan. He's a baseball fan to some extent. It could lead to other doors opening. It's just hard to think of the way that a commentator has to be so open with their audience versus how closed off CM Punk generally is. There's something about that that doesn't quite square with me. But I think we've seen in the UFC, UFC CM Punk, MMA CM Punk is a completely different person, the way he conducts himself, than pro wrestling CM Punk. And I don't just mean that from like an on-camera perspective, but you know, and part of what people like about CM Punk is his disrespectfulness, his anti-establishmentism. In the UFC, he's the complete opposite of that. He's, yeah, you know, he's a really good employee, and he's, you know, everyone says nothing but good things about him aside from his fighting, but they'll give him all the credit in the world. He's such a hard worker, so nice to everybody around him. It's the complete opposite of what you have within the WWE. So I could see him changing that, or at least softening his public persona. But this does seem to be, I would say, of all the options, except for him coming, you know, coming back to wrestling, which he doesn't want to do. So we just have to take that off of the table. This is probably a better outcome than him actually like fighting for Cage Fury. Like that would probably not work out too well for anybody. He's got two UFC paychecks in his history. So he is a UFC fighter, has some registered offense in that last fight. So I think this will really work out great for him. I feel we're so positive today, Rick. We said the UFC Denver show was positive. The Misha Tate announcement was positive. Rising gets positive. Nothing but positivity coming from us.
Well, let's change that. We're eventually going to be talking about the next FS1 card, and then the negativity will start flowing in.
Well, let's go there. Let's just talk about the main event. You got Neil Magny taking on Santiago Ponzinibbio. Not a bad fight by any stretch, but I was thinking about this. We say this all the time, like, oh, this is an average card with a pretty decent main event. They're decent fights. They're not actual main events. There's no headline quality to them. There's no attraction to them. They're just fights. But what do you think of this one? Who takes the victory in this epic clash between Magny and Ponzinibbio?
Yeah, I think Santiago will probably end up winning, but it's hard against it's hard to bet against Neil Magny. Neil Magny is kind of that guy who you can't exactly pinpoint what his like strengths are. I mean, he does do get a lot of, he's gotten knockouts and submissions. He's just kind of an awkwardly, he's an awkward fighter in some ways. And I think, but I think Santiago will take advantage, but, it won't really matter because it'll be you, me, and 110,000 other people watching this fight. I think that this is going to be incredibly low rated, and it's definitely going to be a fight that, while it might be good, will not have nearly as much buzz around it that the zombie Yair Rodriguez fight had. I don't know if I'm saying these two aren't the future like the previous two fighters I mentioned are, but I mean, this is... I really hope this gets fixed by the time we roll around to ESPN because, yeah, this is where we become a lot less positive. This is not UFC caliber fight night.
And Ponzinibbio is a really good fighter and a really interesting fight, like fun fighter to watch.
Right.
He's in that Mike Perry, Donald Cerrone kind of mold. He's just so much of an unknown relative to even those guys that it's, and then it's a tough sell, very much so. And like you said, Magny's a very frustrating fighter for a lot of guys to fight. He's not maybe not the best fighter in the world, but he can definitely stall what you're doing and make you look, you know, make you fight ugly and make you fight his type of fight. Decent actual second for the top fight between Ricardo Lamas and Darren Elkins. That one can be fun, but I don't know if it will be. I don't think it will be, but I'm going to take Lamas in that one. Who you got in that
I'm going to be cheering for Darren the Damage Elkins just because he's got that sort of underdog sort of appeal to him. He lost his last fight, but it was a decision loss, and it wasn't that devastating. So I hope he gets another win and kind of gets his mojo back because I enjoy him a lot. He's kind of a throwback to older, crazier fighters.
Yeah, he's a fun little fighter. And Lamas was doing so good till he had that brutal KO about a year ago. He was really rising up in the division. At one point, had a fight booked against like Jose Aldo. So a bit of a transition period from here. Nothing else too exciting on this card. And you can tell by our enthusiasm, we're not exactly excited about the fights we did mention. I will note that Khalil Rountree is fighting Johnny Walker. So he's fighting some bourbon, which should be fun. Cynthia Calvillo is on this card, so a woman that the UFC seemed to were going to put all their promotional muscle behind there for right. A little while, and they still might, but her loss to your favorite, Carla Esparza, seemed to cool that quite a bit, and she hasn't fought in almost a year. She had the USADA suspension. Do you think she's going to kind of get back on track?
Yeah, here? I mean, I'm sure the UFC hopes so. And to go back to Rountree, man, I forgot his last fight was against the kickboxer, the Saki, Gokhan Saki, and nobody thought he was going to win that fight, and he just knocked him straight out. So we'll see if he's able to replicate that. And yeah, you're right. Calvillo, I don't really know if she'll win or not. It's hard to say. She might have been one of those things they put too much promotion behind her before she was actually ready.
Yeah, which we see that even like a guy like Sage Northcutt, who – has had a pretty good little career in the last couple of years, but he has that perception of being kind of overhyped by the promotion, so it works against him. He's a guy who's been talking to, he's a free agent, been talking to ONE FC. I think he'd be a great pickup for one of those offshore organizations, or even for Bellator. I think he'd be a good guy for anyone to have. We don't talk about him very much. He's kind of become the butt of many, many MMA jokes, but he's not a bad fighter by any stretch, and he's still super, super young.
You know, in the UFC, if they're listening to us right now, the pacing you guys did on the 25th anniversary show was actually really good. Like, I felt like that show ended once the main card started, it ended in like 2.5 hours. I thought that was – they didn't like do too much stalling. It still kind of had that slow FS1 pace to a certain degree, but it wasn't that bad. This card – needs to go quickly. Like, please, please, please do not be showing us like video packages of the main event if there's a first round knockout, like the third fight down. Just buzz through this, please.
This could use Fight Pass pacing because it's a Fight Pass level card, but it's FS1 card.
Yeah.
Last night's card, though, I think it didn't drag because there's actually interesting content during the start.
Right.
like when they did the little profile on Ronda Rousey and that sort of thing. There was stuff to chew on. What happens is that, you know, they just go back to the desk, and last night you had Rashad and Jimmy Smith, and said Eve Edwards, and then they kind of rehash what's going on and what's going to happen. And then you've already seen these video packages like 17 times. By the time the main event rolls around, you start resenting the main eventers because of you're just sick of them. You're oversaturated with them. Rick, let's close the show by talking a little Brock Lesnar. Meltzer reporting this week that he signed a pretty significant deal, kind of like we intimated last week, that's going to take him through the first couple of months of next year. And Meltzer's kind of like speculated, is this the catalyst for Jones DC3? I don't think this changes anything, mm-hmm. to be honest with you.
No, neither do I.
Yeah, it just delays Lesnar's re-entry into the UFC, but I don't think there's a big alteration of when he comes in, because I think that was already kind of set. I think if anything, it's like a month or two that it sets back, like we spoke about last week. Do you think though that Jones DC, is there any daylight that Jones DC 3 at heavyweight is going to happen?
Man, I hope so.
In the next couple of months.
Yeah, that's something I'm – well, you know, Jones has to get win against Gustafsson, and, you know, if it's anything like the first fight, that's not going to be a walk in the park. And if it does happen and Jones gets through him, if he didn't take too much damage, I could see DC Jones 3 happening around March-ish, and then having Brock Lesnar come back just before the summer starts. And that would be great. And I think the thing about Brock Lesnar's return, whether it be, you know, in April and May, June, July, he's only going to have one more big return like this. You know, it's like, yeah, if he goes away again, he's going to be so old at that point. Like, this is kind of the big Brock Lesnar moment. So if it being against DC or John Jones, at this point, it's more about him than it is about which guy he's fighting. You know, like you said, the plan always kind of has been him versus John Jones. It just happened to be DC because John Jones is John Jones and did all those John Jones things, and DC just beat Stipe. So DC kind of just found himself in that position. But ultimately, when Brock is ready, and I don't want him to rush being ready. He needs to be in a full training camp. He needs to get comfortable, and he needs to have a more exciting fight than he did against Mark Hunt. And I want him to potentially win this fight. So if it takes him time, that's okay.
Right. And he's going to be on Raw tomorrow night, or as you're listening to this, in a couple hours, or possibly last night. He looks different. He looks like a guy that's in the USADA program. And it's not just because of that. He's also, I think, training for a different skill set. So I think his body type and seeing him within the testing pool is kind of the biggest indicator of everything. And you make a good point of this being the last big Brock comeback, because even the last one, we only got like 3 weeks of anticipation.
Right.
It was announced at UFC 199. That was the big surprise that they got really mad that Helwani spoiled. But you know, there wasn't like this big anticipation towards it, or even around 2015 when he was kind of negotiating with both companies, we didn't know where he was going. This is like, we know it's in the pike, it's coming, you know what's going to happen. So you would think that Brock would try to maximize this, and Brock's going to have some work to do as far as, I think, selling the fight. I think he's always going to bring with him a big segment. He's going to bring the wrestling fans, which I think he brings over, and something that he can do that nobody else can do on that level. I think he brings curiosity because people still see him, and he in the whole, you know, there's two industries where a lot of guys look really weird and really unique. Nobody looks like Brock Lesnar. So he has that appeal to him. And then he has the appeal that the MMA guys hate him so much that they want to see him get knocked out. So he has all three of those appeals. With that said, with the exception of the Mark Hunt fight, which we don't know how much Brock really sold that fight. That was a loaded card that kind of got screwed up at the very, very end. I mean, it's been since 2011 where he was a UFC headliner and a big attraction. So I think there's going to have to be some work done to reestablish him that the UFC maybe will have to do. They go back and forth, and UFC fans go back and forth, and MMA media goes back and forth by giving him credit for being this kind of prodigy in MMA, and from being this guy that was just handed everything and got a few lucky fights and beat a really old Randy Couture. They bounce back and forth between both those narratives. I think the UFC is going to really have to reestablish Brock as this big force within the UFC. Any last thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this is all about, it's a game of credibility, and we're going to have to be proven that he can be a credible opponent to whoever might be the heavyweight champ at the time, whether it be John Jones or Daniel Cormier. And what can be helped with that is training and time and footage, and they can get plenty of that for Brock's return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. We've been saying it for like a year and a half. I'm looking forward to the big Brock return and how it's handled, and we might be a little further away from that, but it is coming regardless, unless, you know, the absolute ton of money just gets backed up to that Vince gives him to bail him out. But I don't think there's actually any amount that will keep him away from one last UFC fight. But you know what? There is an amount of money that'll keep us away from continuing this show, and it's because we got to go, because we got regular lives to attend to. Rick, you got anything you want to plug or say as any parting shots here on the show this
Thanks
week?
Thanks again, Robert, for having me on, as always. I'd like to say thank you for Mike Hisco for just keeping the website going, MMA Torch, just plugging away and getting those topics going. And he did a really good report about the show we were talking about, the Denver show. And so just thanks for Mike for, being part of the team.
Yeah, we should underline too on the site, we got even a report on the bare knuckle fights, which there just wasn't enough bandwidth for me and Rick to get into. But, you know, you want bare knuckle coverage, we can provide it to you here at MMA Torch. Poor Johnny Hendricks suffered another defeat there, for those keeping scores at home. But that'll pretty much do it for us this week. You can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos. That is RobMVallejos. And follow the Torch-related brands at MMA Torch and at MMA Livecast. And, of course, just like Patrick from Germany did, send us an email, MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALiveCast@gmail.com. And please support all the Torch affiliated brands: PW Torch Livecast, PW Podcast, Go VIP. There's a VIP podcast that's about wrestling podcasts, which is pretty awesome because there's so dang many of them that aren't involved in the Torch universe that it's really hard to keep up with. And those guys really do a good job of going through what was important of the week and get you some high points and give you a recommendation one way or the other if you should check that out. And of course, there's a ton of great content always coming out on the VIP side of things, including our friend Zach Haydorn's On the Canvas show. So, but that'll do it for us this week. For Rick and Robert, we are done. We were out of here, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Yeah.